primary sources, where do we go for them? Tuesday's edition of Hemispheres features fact finders and fact-finding enablers. Sarah Jansen, senior editor at the World Almanac and Book of Facts, Rick Martinez at the National Archive at Denver, and Nicholas Harrell, outreach librarian at the University of Colorado's William A. Wise Law Library. Tuesday at 6 on Hemispheres.
It's about half a minute past 7 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. And it is time for the Opera Box. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Opera Box. I'm Ron Nadell, and I'm your host tonight. With 2017 behind us, a new year ahead of us, and the current events around us, I thought we could use some inspiration. Tonight, my playlist features operatic heroes and heroines, inspiring characters who transcend unimaginable challenges, accompanied by great music. Such as the faithful baby doe who stands by her man no matter what. And with the music of Puccini, Wagner, Mozart, Beethoven, screw your courage to the sticking place and join me in tonight's Opera Box. Yeah. always through the changing. From The Ballad of Baby Doe by American composer Douglas Moore. Baby Doe, who promised her husband Horace Tabor never to sell his silver mine, although it led to her financial ruin. One of our heroines in tonight's Opera Box playlist. 5.5 minutes after 7 o'clock, you're listening to the Opera Box on KGNU, and I'm your host, Ron Nadel, with a playlist of operatic heroes and heroines, tragic and victorious, silent sufferers, or dynamic liberators. And Khalaf, the unknown prince from Puccini's Turandot, is definitely a romantic, dynamic hero. The setting is Peking, and Khalaf is in disguise. He's the son of exiled King of Mongolia. In Act One, he sees the beautiful and icy Princess Turandot. Her beauty is so great, noblemen from all over come seeking to marry her, but she will only marry the man who can answer her three riddles. If they cannot answer them, they are beheaded. Well, Khalaf impetuously took the challenge and successfully answered the riddles. Turandot, horrified at the prospect of marrying, asks him if he wants her without her love. He replied he will not force her to marry him. If she can learn his name by sunrise the next day, he will submit to the axe. Well, in this aria from Act Three, it's that night, and Khalaf is musing to himself. No one is sleeping, not even the princess, as she scours the city for anyone who might know his name. And thinking out loud, his passion grows. When morning comes, I win. Nessun dorma, no one sleeps. Khalaf, listening to the people of Peking as Princess Turandot scours the city in search of his identity. Well, in that recording, we heard the great Luciano Pavarotti. Zubin Mehta conducted the London Symphony Orchestra and chorus. And we're just about 10 and a half minutes now after 7 o'clock on the Opera Box here at KGNU. And I'm your host, Ron Nadel, with a program of operatic heroes and heroines. Our next heroine is an innocent young woman, Susanna, who stands up to an entire town single-handedly. In Carlisle Floyd's opera, Susanna, the setting is a small mountain town in Tennessee. Susanna is just 18 years old and an orphan, and she lives with her older brother. Well, one day when the elders and the new pastor of the church are looking for a place along the river to perform baptisms, they spy Susanna bathing in the nude. And the elders hide their lust with outrage at her, and it's not long before rumors are spreading. She's accused of trying to seduce all the young men of the town. The pastor comes to make her confess her sins. She's alone. He forces himself on her. Later, the people try to run her out of town, but she confronts their hypocrisy with a shotgun. She will not be intimidated. She will not leave. And she makes the town people back down. Now here, in Act One, Susanna sings an Appalachian folk song. She's a simple, good-hearted girl.
Oh.
The trees on the mountain. The innocent young Susanna sings a folk song in her Appalachian setting. That's from the opera Susanna by American composer Carlisle Floyd. And we heard the great soprano Cheryl Studer with Kent Nagano conducting the Lyon National Opera Orchestra. These next two heroes have something in common. They're willing to risk everything to rescue the one they love. Our first heroine, hero is called upon to rescue a young princess after he himself is saved. Three women, servants of the Queen of the Night, rescued him from a huge serpent. In return, they ask him to rescue Papagena, the queen's daughter who was kidnapped. They show him a portrait of Papagena, and he falls instantly in love and agrees. In Beethoven's Fidelio, Leonora disguises herself as a man to work in the prison where her husband is a political prisoner of the evil Governor Pizarro. She plans to rescue her husband, even if it means killing, to do so. And in this aria, Leonora tries to bolster her courage, afraid she might falter in the last moment. Two heroes willing to risk everything to rescue the one they love.
Yeah.
Leonora, worried that her courage might fail her at the last moment when she tries to free her husband from political prison. Come Hoffnung, come hope. In the end, she will save him from the corrupt governor, jumping out of the shadows, wielding a pistol pointed right at the governor's chest. From Beethoven's Fidelio. And we heard Christa Ludwig with Otto Klemper conducting the Philharmonia Orchestra. Before that, Papageno seeing the portrait of the kidnapped Princess Papagena, falling instantly in love and agreeing to find and rescue her. From The Magic Flute by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. And we heard the great Irish tenor Stuart Burrows with Georg Scholte conducting the Vienna Philharmonic. It is 7:30. You're listening to The Opera Box here on KGNU, and I'm your host, Ron Nadel, with a program of operatic heroes and heroines. Be sure to stay with me at 8 o'clock for a Classic Monday and the 18th program in my series on the symphony. Tonight, Sergei Rachmaninoff and Sergei Prokofiev. Right now, our next hero is called upon to demonstrate superhero strength. And I'm talking about Siegfried from Wagner's massive four-part operatic series, The Ring. It's a mythological series of stories of dragons, giants, gods, and an all-powerful ring. You've heard me say this before, the plot of the four operas is so elaborate, it would take me a half an hour to summarize it. But in the third of the four operas, we meet the powerful young Siegfried. He's just a youth. His parents are both dead. And Siegfried has been raised by a dwarf who is a blacksmith. Now, for selfish reasons, the dwarf's been trying for years to forge a sword for Siegfried. Each time Siegfried tests it, whacking it against the anvil, it smashes the sword into pieces. The dwarf, Mima, finally shows Siegfried pieces of a sword that once belonged to his father, the sword named Nothung. Siegfried wants the sword repaired, but Mima says that the metal has resisted all of his efforts. Although he's not a blacksmith himself, Siegfried instinctively takes matters into his own hands. He files the pieces to dust, melts the dust in the furnace, hammers the melted metal into shape himself. And this time, when he tests Nothung, we hear a loud clang as the anvil is cut into two.
Thank you. Oh,
Siegfried forges his father's sword, and something about the metal is so strong, so sturdy, when he tests it against the anvil is cut in two. The exciting conclusion to Act One of Siegfried, the third of four operas in Wagner's series, The Ring. And in that recording, we heard the great tenor Wolfgang Wendgassen as Siegfried, and the great tenor Gerhard Stolze as Mime, the evil dwarf. Georg Scholte conducted the Vienna Philharmonic. Well, we're coming up right now on 13 minutes before 8 o'clock. You're listening to the Opera Box on KGNU, and I'm your host, Ron Nadell, with a program of heroes and heroines. And our last heroine for tonight is a brave young woman who's learned to take care of herself living in the Wild West. In Puccini's La Fanciulla del West, the girl of the Golden West, Minnie is the tender-hearted, sharp-shooting owner of a saloon in a California mining town. Well, she finds herself in love with the bandit Ramirez, but he has denounced his criminal ways, and they've been living together, trying to make up for his past, while also trying to stay out of sight of the sheriff and his men. In the final scene of the opera, Ramirez has been caught, and the miners are about to hang him summarily. But Minnie rides up and puts herself bodily between the men and Ramirez, holding everyone at bay with her gun. They know she means business. After she appeals to their consciences, they reluctantly let her and Ramirez ride off. This is from the conclusion of La Fanciulla del West, the girl of the Golden West.
Impecatelo! sangue nelle vene. La gamba vi fa sbiancare il viso.
Lasciatela!
Oh, the tough but tender-hearted Minnie rides up and rescues her lover Ramirez just before the sheriff and the miners are about to hang him. They let them go, although their hearts are broken. The bittersweet ending to La Fanchula del West, the girl of the Golden West. And we heard the great Carol Neblett, who just passed away last year, American soprano, as Minnie. Of course, the great Plácido Domingo as Ramirez. Zubin Mehta conducted the chorus and orchestra of the Royal Opera of Covent Garden. Well, this is your host, Ron Nadel. I want to thank you for joining me for tonight's program of Operatic Heroes and Heroines. I hope you found some inspiration there. Stay tuned for a Classic Monday after this.
This program is presented by you, the KGNU Listener members, and by the first annual Martin Luther King Day Talent Showcase, sponsored by Boulder Country Day School. This event takes place on January 15th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Avalon Ballroom, located at 6185 Arapahoe Boulevard. Tickets and information can be found on Facebook at Martin Luther King Day Talent Show Boulder.
Well, good evening and welcome everyone to a Classic Monday. I'm still your host, Ron Nadel. Tonight, I bring you the 18th in my series of programs on the symphony, tracing the evolution of the symphony from its roots in Baroque concerti of the 1600s to today. Tonight's segment will review the symphonic works of Russian composers Sergei Rachmaninoff and Sergei Prokofiev, two contemporary but very different composers, both piano virtuosos. But one was introspective and wore his heart on his sleeve, and the other was extrovert with a mind of a chess master. We'll compare their symphonic styles when you join me now for a Classic Monday. Sergei Rachmaninoff lived from 1873 to 1943. He was a piano prodigy, gifted with tremendous dexterity and huge hands. By 19, he graduated from the Moscow Conservatory and had composed several works. His first symphony of 1897 was so harshly criticized, he suffered paralyzing depression and didn't compose a single note for 4 years. He sought a variety of therapies, and when he finally emerged from his depression, he composed a second piano concerto and his second symphony. Both became giants of the repertoire. He was sometimes criticized for being too conservative with lush melody and harmony. His melodies are long, emotional, akin to romanticism and influence of Tchaikovsky. Was considered old-fashioned by then. He was also criticized for having too easily recognizable a fingerprint in his works. And you'll see what this means with this symphony, but I don't think it's a bad thing. Now, the second symphony is dedicated to his counterpoint teacher, Sergei Taneyev. Taneyev was also a student of Tchaikovsky. The symphony begins broodingly. Within this introduction, you can hear a recurring up, down, down, up motif, which makes me think of like a sawtooth pattern.